Blog Talk Radio.
This is Merle with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit. Well, it's a pretty nice day here in New York City. It's 5 p.m. on my time, and it's all about music and a particular composer and singer from years back. Well, you remember songs like Puff the Magic Dragon, Lemon Tree, If I Had a Hammer, yes, Peter, Paul, and Mary, Blowing in the Wind, and things, ones like that. And, well, Peter Yarrow is still singing along, and he will be performing at the Kupferberg Center at Queens College. Actually, it's the Leffrak Hall, which is one of the newest places there. So Peter is going to come on and talk about what his career has been since no longer Peter, Paul, and Mary. Or as I said, I'm going to be talking with Peter, Paul, and Mary without Paul and Mary. We're just waiting to have him call in. I'll give you some songs like Leaving on a Jet Plane, I Dig Rock and Roll Music. We're going to talk about how much that he actually composed. I remember songs like Cruel War, Hurry Sundown, and one of the ones I loved very much listening to was their version of The First Time I Saw Your Face. And I'm going to find out, I'm going to ask them, like, who did it? Hello, Peter.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, absolutely just fine. Yes, it is. And it's such a pleasure to talk with you. I grew up with
you. Good to talk to you, too.
Yeah,
by your accent that you are like myself, a New Yorker.
Yes, New York, Queensite, as a matter of fact.
Right, got it. I got it.
Yeah, and I have to. I'm dying.
So you like the first time ever I saw your face? You know that's.
Yes, and you know
people don't realize
when I heard Roberta Flack sing it, I hated it.
But when. Ewan McCall and Peggy Seeger. Peggy Seeger is Pete Seeger's sister.
Uh-huh.
And she wrote a song with Ewan McCall, who was an incredible Irish singer and really just phenomenal. So these were two folk singers that wrote that song. And it was we knew about it long before, it was something that was probably heard about. It just wasn't a song that was considered a pop song at all. And frankly, I think that, I love Roberta Flack and everything, but to me, the spirit of the song was really captured by Mary, and that preceded by a number of years.
Yeah.
The Roberta Flack recording. It was, we never looked for hit songs. we looked for songs we loved, and we never went to hit songwriters. We would just, you know, take an unknown songwriter like Nina Gordon Lightfoot or John Denver or Bobby Dylan and record a song, and that was that. And later, that would provide the platform for their getting to be known. Laura Nero, too, we recorded. And When I Die, you know, very long time before Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Oh, yeah.
We recorded. So you really know the Peter Paul and Mary catalog.
Oh, well, that's, you know, like I was, well, okay, I'm 68 years old. So that gives you an idea, you know, as a teenager, that's what we listened to. We would actually had friends of mine, and we would sit around. Actually, this was one of the things we did to pass the time. We would sit around, go to my friend's house, and sit around in her bedroom listening to Peter, Paul, and Mary albums. Mm-hmm. That's what we did. And not necessarily the words, but the music itself. There was this flow to the music that I like.
Right.
You know, that's why.
Absolutely.
The first time I saw your face has a completely different flow. You know, it's like you can feel like you're playing the guitar when you're hearing it that way. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So, but anyway, so let's get away from that. I know. So, and so let me just ask you then, did, or any songs that you actually composed or no, or these were people's compositions?
No,
okay.
I composed a lot of songs. Well, I wrote Puff the Magic Dragon with Lenny
Lipton.
Oh, so
you wrote that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I had a co-writer, Lenny Lipton. I wrote Light One Candle, which is the Hanukkah song. I wrote Day Is Done, which became well-known and a hit. I wrote a song called The Great Mandela. That's an anti-war song. I wrote a solo song that some people know called I wrote We'd Be the Sunshine. And another song called hang on just a second. Oh, bye-bye. All right, I'm saying goodbye to somebody.
Okay.
And No Easy Walk to Freedom. Lots and lots of songs. Noel wrote the wedding song.
Uh-huh.
That was a
Do you
song
have
for my wedding.
Songs that you wrote like on one album, necessarily?
No. They were interspersed on all the albums.
Oh, okay.
At least album,
so you didn't
on the
like
first album.
Make up an album like recently or something of songs I wrote?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, Paul Stuckey, who is Paul, Peter Paul Mary. He, he's a very prolific songwriter. And he did do an album recently of songs that he wrote. It's absolutely spectacular. Really, really wonderful.
Now, there was a point you were performing with Paul, right?
I still do.
Oh, okay. I'm asking because that's the last time I saw you. You were in Westbury Music Hall, Westbury Theater, out on Long Island.
Right.
And I came backstage afterwards, and it was one of the songs from one of the albums, For Baby, For Bobby.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I wanted, and you sang it to me. Went backstage and you played the guitar and sang it for me.
that
was the last time I saw you.
It's good to talk to you again.
I'm sorry?
It's good to talk to you again.
Yes. And I have everybody saying, say hello for me. Say hello for me. I got, you know, on Facebook saying. So let me ask you, so you have been doing not a lot of, I guess you kind of causes type songs. Right?
Well, a lot, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there are new songs, too, that you'll hear when I perform tomorrow.
Ah. Oh, okay. Which then brings me to will I be able to, are these recorded yet?
But not released, yes. I have recorded two of the songs, actually three, but I won't be doing all three of them. The one that I know I'll be doing is called The Children Are Listening. You can imagine what it's about. It says, the children are listening, the children are listening. If we say something cruel and harsh, they will do the same. The children are listening. If they grow up to be bullies, we'll have ourselves to blame. It's time to come together across the dividing lines for the children who are suffering with the pain in these our times. It's not just ridicule and taunts and bullying by their peers. Grown-ups' rage and hate-filled words are ringing in their ears. The children are listening. The children are listening, etc.
That's certainly apropos. Not just the fidelity of the police, but a certain person that's running the country.
Okay. That's right. He who shall not be named. Despicable actions and ways of being and cruelty and meanness such a bloated, vulgar person. Besides his, I'm not going to talk about his politics because I don't even know where he stands for his politics, but I know that as a human being, he's despicable. A despicable creature.
Yes, I know. Okay. Anyway, what actually is, I have to tell
on the
you,
other
the
hand,
timing
it's
wise.
Also true that I do not believe that people who feel otherwise are to be put down. They have their reasons.
Yeah.
And they're very frequently very good people who love America and want good things for America and don't see things politically the way I do. But this division in our country, very sick and very dangerous. And we absolutely have to stop it dead in its tracks, or it could be really, really dangerous to us, because what exists today is very reminiscent of what existed in Germany before Nazism took over, with a divided country and the hatred of Jews and homosexuals and gypsies and mentally ill people. And we've got here this division that's been fostered by he who shall not be mentioned, and it keeps everybody busy, while in the meantime, terrible things are being planned and plotted, and then all of a sudden the dreamers are going to be expelled, and we should be able to stand up as a nation, no matter political perspective, and say, this you cannot do, but it's all hyper-politicized now, so this is looked upon as a political issue. It's not. It's an ethical issue. You can't take it in that direction.
And I totally agree. I totally agree. And every time you try to concentrate on it, it's like somebody says, somebody sort of gets your mind off of it with something else.
Right.
You won't have to. Yeah. Mhm. I know.
So
I wanted to tell you what turned out to be very apropos. I was listening to the song "Light One Candle."
Mhm.
And I wanted to share with you why it's so apropos right now.
Yeah.
Over at the, I don't know if you're familiar with the Queens Museum, but I'll just say the Queens Museum was actually the first General Assembly of the United Nations.
You're kidding.
And yeah, actually, that was part of the World's Fairs, and that's the building that became the first while they were building the United Nations. And what took place there was, I don't think it was the actual signing, but that's when Ben-Gurion signed so that Israel, you know, to talk about the becoming Israel becoming a state.
Yes.
And that got set up over there. And what recently happened was that they wanted, for the 70th anniversary of Israel, they
yeah.
wanted, it was a private event to set up to do a reenactment.
Right.
Executive director turned around and said, no, we're not going to do it because we don't want to hurt our Palestinian friends. And everybody went absolutely crazy, as if this was political as opposed to historical. So when I heard
it is highly controversial. I mean, there is no doubt that from the time that Israel, and as a Jew, I have to say this, you know,
yes.
from the time that Israel was conceived as a state, and we know what occurred at the time, you know, Palestinians have lived under occupation. And there is a time to say, for them, if you're in Israel, and I am there a lot, when there is the celebration of Israel becoming a state, you see things in Israel that are just really scary going on in terms of some of the way that the joy is manifested. It's really targeted in very, very, very frightening ways at Palestinians. It's become a politicized reality, and it's not. It shouldn't be that Israel becoming a state should be anything other than a celebration. But it is true that it's a day of mourning for the Palestinians because they are living under occupation, which, by the way, I believe, as a person who wants everything for Israel, is terribly, terribly damaging to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really the worst thing that could be in terms of Israel's being the evolution of, I mean, I know people who were in the 47 war, Amnon Ben Yehuda, who was taken off the battlefield by his friends. He was in a coma, and he was saved. And he says, you know, I did not fight so that this would happen in Israel. And it's, you know, and it's like in America that, you know, if you take a knee when the Star Spangled Banner is being played, supposedly it's unpatriotic, you know. But this is the same kind of thing. There is a time when, if you're part of the civil rights movement and you love America, what you do is you say, this is not right. The remnants of slavery cannot be celebrated. the residual realities. Couldn't say it then. You had to say, if you are patriotic, if you love America, then you're going to throw your heart into the civil rights movement.
Right.
And in the similar sense, the people, there are people who love Israel, you know, who would not for a moment celebrate the birth of Israel without absolutely noting that the Palestinians, after all these years, are still living under occupation. And of course, the answer is, well, that's because they want to kill us. You know, I mean, believe me, I've heard all of that. But the reality is that peace would have come if Rabin had lived. And now we're looking at a situation where Israel itself is so compromised by building of the settlements that a two-state solution becomes, well, you know, close to impossible. And what does that mean? And it means that if it's one state, it's going to be, there's no way for it to be a Jewish state without its becoming an apartheid state. And that's been said, yeah, you know, by John Kerry. It's been said by former President Carter, and then they get slammed. I mean, it brings up passions in Jews that become fiery beyond fiery. And it's like, if you, as an American, you say, no, I take a knee in the middle of my concerts almost every time.
Do you?
You know,
really?
And absolutely. For Black Lives Matter.
Let me ask you a question. Did you start doing that after the thing with the football?
Of course. It wouldn't have even
occurred
to me not do it before.
Okay, because the reason I'm asking is I was talking with somebody because taking a knee in football has a different significance. And most people who even watch the game don't even realize that the players take a knee because somebody just got injured, and it doesn't matter what team. So it's like we don't care whether you're the opposing team, whether we just knocked you out, you just knocked us out, we take a knee, and we don't get up until you get up, or you're taken off. So it's a different type of a thing. So when I saw the thing
that's
with the taking of the knee, I thought, couldn't they come up with something different?
No, well, that's an excellent thing, taking a knee. If that's the case, it means there is injury to our country, and we're respecting that.
Right, okay.
We are respecting our country and saying we our country has been injured by something, and we are acknowledging that. And we have been injured by the continuing of racism that plagues the criminal justice system and puts young blacks in jail in extraordinary proportions. And
oh, yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. And listen, Peter, Paul, and Mary opposed the policies and the laws of the United States for many, many, many years. I mean, but that was an act of love. That's an act of patriotism. If you're out there opposing the law that makes it possible for blacks in America, in the South, to be deprived of their rights to vote, to let a lynching go on once every 3 days with no legal repercussions, that lets the signs be all over Washington, you know, that for the colored only, for bathrooms and for water fountains, otherwise, you know, they people of color can't have a bathroom or a water fountain, and if you oppose that, if that is the law, so when somebody says, what is it about, that's the law, you don't get, well, what is it about fact that laws have had to change because they were, what about child labor? What about women couldn't vote? Come on.
Right.
What is it about the law that makes you not understand that there are many unfair, terrible laws that had to be undone? I mean, I'm aghast at the way in which some people frame their discussions of these issues. I mean, it's just scary.
So, and when you're performing, what do you find in terms of your audience? I have to use a term, I guess, alta caucus. Do you find that's what you're getting, or you're getting younger people, like, you know, coming and listening to the to your music?
Generally, they're alta caucus, yes, but there they bring their grandchildren, comes a family, you know. But it depends. In some circumstances, it's a very mixed crowd. You know, but I would say the body of people who really, really were into Peter, Paul, and Mary are now, you know, in their 60s, you know, in 50s and 60s, and that's it. And their 70s, of course, but, you know, our contemporaries. But there is a very, very profound respect amongst young people for music from the 60s because of its authenticity and because it wasn't manufactured by one person who was creating all the parts in some studio somewhere. They really appreciate the fact that people were playing together and hoping and dreaming and praying and loving to make that music come to life, and they get that.
And so, you feel by
I was in Standing Rock, right, with my daughter. This music is not, it's not nostalgia, it's not an anachronism, it's right here, right today. And people who come to the concert will see that. It's not in vogue. Folk music is not at the top of the pops. But that's because the music business has become so commercialized and so monetized that you know, when the deciding factor is how much money is this going to make, you know, you're not going to go out on a limb and see Bob Dylan fail on several albums, and you know, it just isn't. Or Randy Newman or Bonnie Raitt or whatever. I mean, it's all the quick and the dead out there. It's all about money, and that's a pity, and that exists.
Have you ever performed, by the way, at Queens College?
No.
Oh, okay. I want you to know, it's interesting that where they decided to have you perform is a much larger venue, which is, like, superb. You can hear, the acoustics are amazing. And this new one that they built is much smaller, is more intimate, and the acoustics are amazing, too. They did such a fabulous job on this particular smaller venue that you'll be at. That
how many seats is it?
You're going to love it.
What, about 400 seats, 500 seats?
Yes. Well, the other Colden Auditorium is about 1,000 people there.
Right.
I mean, they did it. You know, doing that one, they really did some job. You could sit anywhere, you know, and hear. But when they did that, I guess they said, well, we want to make sure if we're building a new place that the acoustics are just as good. And they did. And
that's
fabulous. You'll love it. I'm so looking
forward to it.
Yeah.
Oh, listen, I have to get off the phone for a second. I'll get my back, but I have to take this call. Okay?
Okay, sure. I'll play a commercial. How's that? You need to get off altogether. Okay. Let's see. I should do, well, we got a commercial. I could play the commercial. Where is my commercials here? Fairy tale brownies. Fairy tale brownies. Oh, yes. I'm going to be writing something about the follow-up to the chocolate show that I didn't really get to see. I have some products that are coming to me. And, of course, the fairy tale brownies I got, but it's the they're cookies. They're mint, chocolate mint cookies that I so love. And what I'm waiting for is from Scharfenberger. And the problem is the main company, not where they make it, thank goodness, but the main company is near where the fires are occurring in California. I don't even know if the fires are out yet. It's, you know, one devastation after another. I don't know what's worse. Actually, I don't know what is worse, if a devastation by a hurricane or a devastation, you know, by fire. But anyway, so I'll be doing something regarding the chocolate show. Also, next month I'm going to go to a chicken soup contest. Yes, chicken soup. There's going to be 18 restaurants bringing in their chicken soup kinds, and not just like your typical Jewish jelly chicken soup. As a matter of fact, the one that won last year was from a Caribbean restaurant. Yes. And so that's what I'm going to be doing. And also, what else am I? Next week I have two community theater shows to see. One, I know I'm going to do the praises of Mary Ellen Pierce.
I'm so sorry.
She hasn't done okay.
I had a doctor that I had to get on the phone with, yeah.
Okay, that's not a problem. I chatted a little bit about what's coming up for me. So do you feel like you use your music to communicate? Is that the
not
the
exactly.
best way?
I use my music not to communicate. I use my music to build community. I use my music to create a kind of a heartfelt consensus about how we feel about each other, what we believe in. I use my music in the manner in which Pete Seeger uses music. He was my role model, my mentor. That's what it is.
Ah, okay. That's I will always love your music. That's one thing that won't fade away. It's not even nostalgia. It's just this rhythm of your particular type of folk singing that you guys did that was so pleasant.
Well, it was also filled with the angst of an era in which there were tectonic changes.
Oh, yeah. And I have to tell you, you know, it was interesting that, you know, hearing you guys when you sang Go Tell It on the Mountain.
Yeah.
And the whole difference that it suddenly became a Baptist song. And I'm going, wait a minute. When was this about? Wasn't this about, you know, Moses or whatever kind of thing? Where did it get to be a different religion?
Well, actually, it's a Negro spiritual.
Oh, originally was then.
Absolutely. It was, you know, they in the Negro spirituals, the way we sang it was, go tell it on the mountain to let my people go. That's
right.
What we sing it as. Whereas
right. So
it was sung that Jesus Christ was born, because the Negro spirituals
right.
were, in some ways, they're asserting for a long time that their lives were hell on earth, but when they would die, they would be, go to a place where there was love. And the songs were used in a different way to assert that justice was due and that their lives were unfair. By the way, we've been on for half an hour, and I've got to get going. My daughter and my granddaughter. But it's been fun talking to you.
Yes, and hopefully I'll get to see you tomorrow. I'm asking to
leave
meet you.
Okay, well, if you're 69, then I can safely give you a big hug, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right, sweetheart.
Okay.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you for coming on and talking with us.
That's a pleasure. Take care.
Okay.
I look forward to
bye-bye.
Tomorrow. Okay, bye-bye.
Yes, me too. Bye. All right, everybody. Yep. So that was absolutely, I'm really thrilled about this, to hear this, to do this. Now I'm going to put this up on my Facebook page. And what I'm going to do is end the show right now. So everybody have a great day, evening, or whatever. I'll have a surprise, I think, for another show. Somebody found a tape of one of my shows that I was performing several years ago and sent it to me. So I'm going to the segments of that on just so. Yes, just for the nostalgia, I guess. So everybody, again, enjoy the rest of your day, or if you're about to go to sleep. Okay, now all I got to do is find my cat over here wants to sit in the chair I'm sitting. Okay. All right, everybody. Bye.